Armas de exterminio masivo fueron ensayadas. Era un laboratorio que ponía a prueba los adelantos para producir la muerte. Oficialmente más de 2.000 panameños murieron allí, pero algunas organizaciones aseguran que la cifra rebasó los 6.000, muchos de los cuales fueron enterrados en fosas comunes. Muchos cuerpos también fueron quemados.
And then after Saddam Hussein, of course, invaded Kuwait, Saddam ordered his...
Y luego, después de que Saddam Hussein invadió Kuwait, ordenó el repliegue de sus tropas de regreso a Irak, y George Bush ordenó un ataque contra "estás matando a un sinnúmero de soldados". Eso debió, dice, ser calificado como un crimen de guerra. Eso fue el 26 y 27 de febrero de 1991, cuando la Fuerza Aérea Británica, Canadiense y Norteamericana, liderada por Bush, destruyó entre 1.200 y 2.000 vehículos militares iraquíes en la carretera 80, matando a todos sus ocupantes. El lugar después fue bautizado como el Camino de la Muerte por tratarse de un gusano larguísimo, negro, lleno de vehículos y seres humanos quemados. Wayne Madsen añade que Bush también ordenó el lanzamiento de un misil contra un refugio de Bagdad, dando muerte a muchas mujeres y niños. Estas eran personas que huían de los bombardeos estadounidenses.
For example, George H.W. Bush seems to be the only person who really did not recall where he was on November 22nd.
Wayne Madsen también recuerda cómo George Herbert Walker Bush fue la única persona que no recordó dónde se encontraba el 22 de noviembre de 1963 cuando asesinaron al presidente John F. Kennedy. Es muy fácil averiguarlo, dice, porque él estaba registrado como cliente en el Hotel Sheraton de Dallas ese día y el día anterior. Él no piensa que existía una persona mayor de un estudiante de kindergarten que no recuerde dónde se encontraba en esa fecha, pero claro, con excepción de George Herbert Walker Bush.
The October surprise, October 1980, the deal to send weapons to Iran. It was a arms for no hostages. Don't release those hostages to Jimmy Carter before the election.
Luego está el incidente conocido como la sorpresa de octubre, de 1980, cuando se hizo un acuerdo con Irán para que no se retornaran los rehenes norteamericanos al presidente Jimmy Carter hasta después de la elección presidencial. Las armas fueron llevadas a bordo de un barco mercante de la CIA, dice, y entregadas, y los rehenes fueron liberados al tiempo que Ronald Reagan y George Bush eran juramentados en Washington. Este 5 de diciembre se cumplen 5 años de la muerte del líder sudafricano Nelson Mandela. Los compañeros de Telesur prepararon la siguiente semblanza.
Nelson Mandela fue un abogado, activista, político y filántropo sudafricano que dedicó gran parte de su vida a luchar contra el apartheid social que se vivía en Sudáfrica y Namibia durante el siglo XX. En 1994 se convirtió en el primer mandatario de raza negra que encabezaba el poder ejecutivo y el primero en resultar electo por medio del voto universal en su país. Participó en la fundación de la Liga de la Juventud del Congreso, en la cual tuvo como base ideológica el nacionalismo, el antirracismo y el antiimperialismo. En 1951 se convirtió en presidente de la Liga y a través de su mandato organizó campañas de desobediencia civil contra las leyes segregacionistas del régimen. En 1963 fue condenado a cadena perpetua, acusado de los supuestos delitos de sabotaje, traición y conspiración violenta. Pese a estar encarcelado, fue designado presidente del Congreso Nacional Africano. Cumplió 27 años de condena en la prisión de Robben Island y en 1990 el presidente Frederick de Klerk ordenó su liberación, compartiendo ambos el Premio Nobel de la Paz en 1993. Luego de apartarse de la vida política en 1999, recibió múltiples reconocimientos nacionales e internacionales. Madiba, llamado así por su pueblo, falleció el 5 de diciembre de 2013 luego de sufrir serias complicaciones de salud. Hoy es representación de la lucha por la libertad, la justicia y por ser el símbolo de toda una nación.
Concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
El Comité de Promoción de KPFK 90.7 FM te invita a participar en el primer Zumbatón Anual a beneficio de tu radio favorita.
Este evento de danza y ejercicio será en la Iglesia del Epiphany, 2808 Altura Street, Los Ángeles, California, 90031, el sábado 8 de diciembre 2018, de 1 a 3 de la tarde.
Este evento es para todas las edades y no es necesario tener experiencia. De nuevo, ven con tu familia y amigos a nuestro Zumbatón a beneficio de KPFK 90.7 FM, el sábado 8 de diciembre en la Iglesia del Epiphany.
Información y boletos en el 818-679-5816. Deja un mensaje.
Ven a la fiesta a favor de KPFK.
And up next on Free Radio Stream at freakradio.org, it's Bathrobe Spears broadsides the December 6th. Are we December 6th? We are. December 6th, 2018. And lots of interviews, lots of, well, looking forward to the December 11th shitty council meeting when the new council members come in. And lots of bits and pieces from the streets. So, and particularly a long interview with tenant activist Cynthia Berger, who's working with dealing with a possible, deadline day, demolition day, eviction day on December 12th after the city council fails to extend the rent freeze, which is going to be a real issue. Should be quite a hot meeting on December 11th. You're going to hear more about that if you stay tuned, and I hope you do.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's kick this off with some very brief interviews. Here's Elijah right outside the Sub Rosa Cafe on right after the Wednesday Huff meeting. We're having meetings, last few weeks, been having meetings every week there as the winter gets closer. For those who are outside, people get more concerned about what to do. Not that we do anything at these meetings other than talk about what to do, but who knows? One of these years, talk may lead to action. And here's a fellow I ran into outside, Elijah. I knew him from, not sure whether it was the Freedom Sleepers or some other protest, but here he is. Well, it is December 5th, and about 1:15. I'm talking with
Elijah Dixon.
And Elijah, you say that you got the old strange kind of meter maid approached you.
Well, he left a ticket. It was one of the DO's detention officers from inside the jail. I remember him. And when I saw him around, he was giving out tickets around here then. And I said, I hope you're proud of yourself. He said, be good, Dixon. And that's all he said.
And what kind of a ticket did he give you?
It was a parking ticket. It was before 7 o'clock.
What was it for?
It was for, I guess, illegal parking, I guess, you know.
And how were you illegally parked? Or were you illegally?
I don't know. I was asleep. And, you know, he used to get a breathe time to maybe about 10 o'clock. But that morning, he was on one, and he did it.
So was there a sign that said you're not allowed to be parked in that area? Or?
They do have signs there, but it's most related to parking during the daytime, 2 hours and stuff like that, you know.
I said no, probably said no parking between midnight and 6?
At the library. People still park there. I parked there this morning.
Well, so in other words, this where there's metered parking, right?
Yeah.
And so the meters don't come on until, I think it's 8. I think it's 8 or 9.
Yeah.
But you were, this happened at 7:30.
About 7, yeah.
Oh, that sounds like shit. And you say you've gotten 2 tickets?
I got another ticket on May Street. I was parking in an area where they said you need a permit.
Yeah, before we get into the May Street ticket, the meters, of course, along the downtown area begin, I believe, at 8 or 9. And so if you got a ticket at 7:30, it was a harassment ticket. I don't know about parking in the parking lot next to the library, which is a public parking lot but usually requires you to pay something. But I only think that's between certain hours. But at the other hours, it may be closed. And I've got to confess my own ignorance on this. I should look into it. Next time I get downtown, perhaps I will. Let's hear a little more.
Mid the park, I saw the sign that said between this and this and that, you know. But the May, it said, small print, it said, you must have a permit. So I was parked there about 15 minutes. I went to the courthouse and Jack in the Box, and I came back. I had a ticket.
And the ticket cost was?
The combined was $96.
And you live in your vehicle?
I live in my vehicle. Boy, I'm talking about I live from month to month. You know, $96. Boy, I could have towed that around with me for a whole month. That's $96.
Great.
I can't have.
And we have been talking with
Elijah Dixon.
Anything you want to add, Elijah?
I'm a country boy from Alabama.
Hey,
okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
So a lot of folks, or at least a number of folks, do survive in their vehicles as housing, in essence, in Santa Cruz. And some of us, through militant action, mostly by people who actually are in their vehicles, Julie Shull is a good example of this. Actually, I'm getting Julie's last name wrong. I'm confusing it with something else, I think. But Julie, who runs RV Full-Timers, you can go to her website, particularly concerned about homeless issues, and particularly homeless issues for folks in RVs. I think it's a Facebook page. And she's been sending me emails, which I often forward the stories that she, the newspaper articles and the other interesting bits of information that she comes up with. One of the issues has been the Coastal Commission's support, ironically, I think almost accidentally, for homeless people in their RVs or in their vehicles. Santa Cruz, as you know, made it illegal to sleep in your vehicle after 11 o'clock at night, but that essentially got sidelined by the Boise v. Martin decision. And so they can't really do that at all until they have really adequate shelter. They don't. They unfortunately dumped the entire car park program, which would have been a good idea for people to have a place to go. So they have to let people park and sleep. But they instead put up permit parking. That's been Cynthia Matthews, former council member, Cynthia Matthews' brainchild, which she cooked up essentially to help gentrify neighborhoods, I think, primarily. Well, who knows what her motivation was, but it had that impact. And you've probably seen the signs in some neighborhoods, no parking between midnight and 6 a.m. or 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. without a permit. And, of course, you can't get a permit unless you live there. And usually that means that the spaces are completely empty, because what they really want to do is drive people away, not really provide spaces or assure spaces for those who live there, but to get rid of people who they don't want around there or who they imagine they might not want around there. Now, in the coastal zone, the Coastal Commission has ruled you have to allow access to the coast. And so if you're in the coastal zone and they post these signs, you need to get special permission from a local Coastal Commission agency. And apparently, on a number of occasions, the city has failed to do this. Arrogant or oblivious as it is, and indifferent to the real needs of people. And so Julie Shull sends me an email. The city took down 2 no parking signs on Natural Bridges Drive today, which is good news. And indeed, someone from the Coastal Commission wrote her back and CC'd me at my request as well, copied me the email. And what they added was this. This is from a woman named Sarah Carville at the Coastal Commission locally. I've identified new overnight parking restrictions within the coastal zone that have not been authorized with a coastal permit on Delaware, Natural Bridges, Mission Extension, and Swift. I've also noticed new signs and restrictions on Fair, but these are outside the coastal zone, as you suspected. I think the city understands our concern isn't limited to Natural Bridges. I will reiterate that in my discussion with them. And this is Sarah. So it looks like, at least in some cases, the Coastal Commission's local people are paying some attention. I've not been terribly optimistic about them, even though the Coastal Commission itself did uphold my appeal against former councilwoman, well, I guess she's still a councilwoman until next Tuesday, Rochelle Naroyan's RV's Get Out of Santa Cruz at Night bill, which passed the city council and was rubber-stamped by the local Coastal Commission. But in fact, the appeal, we appealed that permit that they were granted, and the bigger Coastal Commission, when they came to town, found that there were no facilities for RVs in that zone. You couldn't just ban the entire coastal access in the city. And so that one was put on hold and has been on hold for 2 years. So it gives a small measure of relief to people in their vehicles, or particularly people in their RVs as well, who need to sleep at night and wanted to do so along the coast. That also, the deputy sheriff started doing the same thing. I wrote to them, and I think maybe Julie did the same. And they claim to have stopped this, but it's not entirely clear what's happening. So if you have any instances of the sheriffs claiming, putting up signs or acting on the basis of signs that say no parking at night, that has to be okayed with the Coastal Commission if it's along Highway 1. So leave me a call at 423-4833, and I will show you or tell you or advise you as to how to get in touch with the Coastal Commission if you don't already know how. So meanwhile, what about winter shelter for folks who are outside but don't have a vehicle? Maybe they have a tent. Maybe they have a sleeping bag. Maybe they have a blanket and they can hide in the shelter of a building. Maybe they've snuck their way into one of the many vacant buildings around Santa Cruz. I suggest that a project that Huff is working on is to compile a list of vacant buildings, which I think Christopher Crone made up years ago when he was mayor, or when he was council member back in 1998 through 2002 when he was on the city council at that time, which we were trying to find places where homeless people could go for shelter. And that in those days we were optimistically thinking the city could actually provide the shelter. But, of course, that never happened. And now it's up to people themselves to provide the shelter. The city lies about it, claims they have winter shelter when they don't, and then creates programs that it then disperses the next month or 2 months later, even though there's funding aplenty around, at least so it looks. Anyway, the newest campground to emerge is out at Ross, and apparently that's now getting some official sanction, although I don't have a specific paper clarity on that from, say, Chief Mills or Parks and Rec boss Elliot. But in fact, there are 50 to 80 tents out there, or there were in the last couple times I've been out there. There's two porta-potties, not disabled, accessible, not particularly the best, and one washing station. No Sharps containers that I've seen. Maybe there are some inside. And there are a number of trash cans, no dumpster that I've seen. And this is right next to the pedestrian bridge behind Ross's store in the Gateway Shopping Center next to Highway 1. You may have seen it as you drive by on the freeway. In any case, here's one of the occupants. And it's either Brandy or Randy. I'm never sure which. I don't know if my hearing is going or it's just I've got a cold today, so forgive me. But here's something that she had to say when I ran into her a couple days ago. So it's about 4, and we're talking to
Brandy.
This is right
in NTB.
NTB, near the Ross Campground. What do we call it?
Yeah, it's actually called Moe's Office, but not anymore.
Really? Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, a friend of mine camped here, and he slept at the end of the path for a few years, and his name is Moe, and so we called it Moe's Office, and then all of a sudden they started trickling in, and
it became a flood.
Yeah, and they closed the encampment over on River Street, or on Highway 9, so they told them to come here. I don't know if they're rounding them up for slaughter or what the deal is. My camp is safe. I've been there 2 years. You know, I'm smart.
Here in this area.
Yeah, I'm smart enough to, yeah, be in the woods. But, yeah, the shelter just got $3.2 million awarded. And where the fuck is it going? Excuse my language. But they should already, they should have foundation poured somewhere already. These people need a place to be, not a fucking field that's muddy. And they gave them two toilets, and they're lucky they got that. You know,
and washing station.
Yeah, yeah, that it runs out of water because there's too many people.
Have you noticed anything? Have you been? You don't live here at the moment.
Oh God, no! I wouldn't live there ever. No.
Do you visit friends here?
I have a few friends. Yeah, that are in there.
How are they doing?
They're okay. They're okay. There's a lot of, unfortunately, there's a whole lot of drugs going on over there, and you know, I'm not judgmental. You know, I smoke weed, so, you know, I'm 54 years old. You know, I'm an old hippie.
And, of course, she's referring to the Ross campground, which she says over there.
So, but, yeah, no, it's there's been fights and whatnot. The police come and check on them. The Rangers come and check on them.
Occasional charity food giveaways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have, yeah, in fact, day before yesterday, there was two Spanish ladies that came down and brought off pulled pork sandwiches. So, yeah.
Pulled pork. I like pulled pork.
but, yeah, the money that was awarded, they should be doing something. The shelter that's over there is useless to us. You don't.
Almost lack of services center.
They don't, yeah. They don't feed anymore. They don't, excuse me, I have a medical condition. I have ulcerative colitis. I needed to use the restroom. They wouldn't let me in.
When was this?
About 2 weeks ago.
What time of day or night?
It was about 6:45 p.m.
And who denied you access?
One of the guys that works there.
Guard at the gate or?
Yeah, no, just one of the guys that works on the lot. I can't remember.
You got into but you didn't get to the bathroom. You got halfway there?
No, yeah, he wouldn't let me in at all.
So you couldn't get past the gate?
Yeah, no, I call it the inside-out jail. It's ridiculous. They house who they like. It's about nepotism and people that get checks and whatnot. And some of the people that are in there, I'm coming with. I got to go. Some people that are in there don't belong there because they're in there doing drugs and hiding it. And, you know, they need to build a big frigging shelter.
Randy, how long have you been around?
I've been here in Santa Cruz for 33 years. And I've been homeless this time. This is the second time, 2.5 years. And they do nothing to help you.
Hey, get in touch with us again. We'll talk some more.
Okay.
You've got a phone number. We'll call you.
All right.
I'll give you my... All right. I'll remove it.
Thank you.
Randy.
Have a good day.
Hey, you too. Watching the camp bridge. Watching the campground past the pedestrian bridge. And it's dried out somewhat. Counting the tents. About 60 or 65 visible from standing near the garbage cans. And there are bunches of garbage cans. I'm counting 10, 11. And still kind of wet, but not as muddy as it was. Let's see if Mac is around here anywhere. Look, has moved his tent. With, if you want to say.
Steve-o.
And Steve, how long you been here, Steve?
Years.
And how long you been on this particular campground?
Oh, probably...
Weeks, months? Weeks. What do you make of it?
Okay.
Any, is it... Last year at this time, did you ever get to the San Lorenzo camp?
I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. I thought it looks... It's okay.
Yeah?
I think,
The man is tongue-tied, but we have been talking with...
Steve-o.
Thank you, sir. And musical break time. Here's an oldie from Phil Oakes, 10 Cents a Coup, it's called.
It was a used car dealer's election, and the choice was rather small. The boys agreed it's the war we need, so there's no president at all. Here's to Nixon and you. They are the stars of the stage and screen. It's not since Laurel and Hardy have I laughed so hard I've screamed. I thought that Johnson was the devil. I thought we couldn't do no worse. Now the White House stands in Disneyland. This country must be under a curse. Here's to Nixon and you. They are the stars of the stage and screen. It's not since Laurel and Hardy. Nixon died of a suntan. There was only Spiro left. And he's swearing in, he fell on his chin. He assassinated himself. Here's to Nixon and Atkins. They are the stars of the stage and screen. It's not since Laurel and Hardy have I laughed so hard I scream.
Well, it's not one of Oak's greatest hits, although it's from an album called Phil Oak's Greatest Hits. A couple of announcements, since things are going to be happening towards the end of the show around town. At least there's one meeting happening at 7:30 out at 150 Felker Street, which is where Brent Adams' day-night storage program is located in Suite H. It's you have to kind of go inside the corridor alleyway, and you'll probably see some signs directing you to he's describing as a coalition. Let's see, it's a Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness, a Path Forward, hosted by the Warming Center program, 7:30 tonight, Thursday, December 6th. I'm reading from his recent email at the Coalition on Homelessness meeting room, 150 Felker Street, Suite H. I think that's the storage meeting room. He writes, as federal and state homelessness funding moves through like huge weather systems, seemingly leaving local residents with little to say on the matter, it's important to realize we have the ability to determine our own path forward. Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness is a place where citizens can band together and address basic needs while being aware of these funding sources. This moment is critical, so let's come together and build a collective vision and collective power towards helping people who sleep outside. And he further writes some questions. What is our long-term vision as a community? Easily accessible hygiene, laundry, and storage for all. Safe, clean, and dignifying shelter for all by any means. A true declaration of the homeless crisis. HUD, CSEH, HEAP, and HAP funding paradigms. Those are acronyms for organizations. I can't tell you exactly which ones they are. He's been pretty keeping up on that. If you want to get up on that, go down there tonight. 150 Felker Street, that's the end of the street which Denny's is on, sort of the last street right past Denny's as you head toward the river, and you'll find his office and this meeting at 7:30. I believe all are welcome. I would have had a direct report from him, but unfortunately he got angry with me and hung up as we talked. That hasn't happened for a while, but this time it did. It's too bad. I'm hoping that we will mend some bridges, and again, we'll have some more information from Brent, who's a very good source of information, I think. We don't agree on things at different times, but he usually doesn't. We may growl and yell at each other at times, but hopefully we can continue to exchange info, and we'll see if that continues, and hope it does. Now, we used to have callers on this show, and there's talk at the Free Radio Collective of actually getting the phone active again and having it put in somebody's home, since we don't seem to be able to find a studio. But you regular listeners should know there's still a $300 reward out for anyone who can find us a location for a year or any part of a year. You'll get some of that $300, prorated. We need a 10x10 space. We need access to electricity, internet, bathroom, stuff like that. And you can find more by going to freakradio.org, more about the station as well. We don't think we're back on the air yet. We're still negotiating for a second thing, which is a transmitter site. Transmitter site is where we will put up our antenna. And if you have any ideas on that or on the studio space prospect, give a call to me at 423-4833 and I'll put you in touch with the collective. That's 423-4833. Or you can go online to freakradio.org and leave us a message there. In any case, I did get a call while I was doing some recording of the show, and in this tradition of Free Radio's access to the airways to all who call in, here's that caller doing what he describes as a rant.
We have a caller who has been an activist for quite a number of years. Hi, caller.
Hi, Robert.
And what ranting do you have for us today?
Well, Robert, I was recently... see, there's a news problem in Santa Cruz. I mean, I've been in a lot of protests that were covered by the Sentinel, so I know that they don't cover it very well. So the only place I can find out is either at Indie Bay or Free Radio, and Free Radio is the only uncensored source of news in this town. And I don't get it where I'm at, unfortunately, so I call you. And the other day I called you to find out what was going on at City Hall, and you didn't even know that there was an item on the agenda. I did find out about it at Indie Bay, because they're not putting them on anymore. For some reason, they buried this in an emergency meeting, and it concerned the rent control initiative. And you were quite upset because Sandy had promised you to get some more, to get it on the agenda, but apparently they have changed the rules or something. I haven't heard anything about this, or is this how it's always been? But apparently someone else had never heard this. If you need, what, 4 city council member and a staff report to put anything on the agenda?
Well, what it boiled down to was, it's a little different, but, you know, you kind of got some of the gist of it. I had heard there was a special session coming up last Tuesday, and the only items on the agenda were the ADU issue and then, I guess, an issue of rental assistance if you're evicted, or actually being given notice when you're being evicted for as a 90-day rather than a 30-day notice. And neither of those items, it turned out, got voted on. They were both postponed until the December 11th agenda, largely because, as you may learn by reading that paper of record, the Santa Cruz Urinal, or Sentinel as it's called, that the city attorney insisted in a closed session that they hastily held. Apparently there was a lawsuit being threatened by a state landlord association that if they tried to extend the time for renters to be requiring landlords to notify tenants when they're relocating them because they're moving in, that was already preempted by state law, and you can't extend it for more than 30 days, and the landlords would sue. That's kind of my understanding, though I may have it slightly wrong, but you and everybody else will be able to clarify what it is either at the end of today, because it'll be on the agenda for next Tuesday, which will be the last city council meeting of the year, December 11th, and unless they hold an emergency meeting, which they probably should if they want to deal with a rent freeze, but you never can tell what these folks do. And actually, what I asked of Sandy Brown was that, Councilmember Brown, was that she request that the rent freeze be put on the special agenda on December 4th. Because that would give more time for the thing to pass, or at least it would put the spotlight on the issue, mobilize activists. I don't have any illusions that the rest of the council would support her, but she would at least, it would come up for public comment. Right. So she...
It's just to have a voice for the people occasionally. You know, we don't always win, but at least we should have a voice when we get people on the city council, I think.
Right.
Well, that's what I don't like about that 4 people. I mean, apparently 2 liberals are on now, so maybe that 4 people is going to work against them. But this kind of same thing happened at Occupy. They wanted to make it very hard to put things on the agenda on Occupy. And then Republicans are doing this crap all the time. It's a very sneaky procedural way. No one even notices it to take away your freedoms. And I just don't like it. And the same thing happening with the library in a garage bullshit. They never asked the public whether they wanted a library in a garage. They just asked, would you have this lot of square feet or the more square feet version, which is a library in a garage, without telling them that was the library in a garage. And they also lied about some other funding things. And they've been burying things from the public and trying to pull all these dirty tricks all the time. You know, it's very annoying. And we don't have, you're about the only one that covers this stuff, Robert, because, as I said, the Sentinel, it just doesn't cover it well. They don't pay the reporters enough or something. But I've noticed during the protests, and you've been to the protests too, the coverage in the Sentinel is inaccurate.
Well, what happened at that meeting, and I think I may have talked about this on Sunday, was I wanted to get Sandy Brown simply to ask the mayor by email so it would be documented that she wanted an item on the agenda. And it turned out when I talked to the mayor, I happened to run into him last Wednesday when we actually followed your suggestion of doing an actual action right after the Huff meeting. We went over to the mayor's office. And,
oh, good.
And we attempted to get the mayor.
Like while the iron is hot.
Indeed. And he said that Sandy Brown had never approached him about the issue, had never emailed him, had never spoken to him at all. And he also made the claim that he wouldn't put it on the he hedged a lot, but I said, but yes, David, his name is David Terrazas, for those who don't know, you have the power to put that on the agenda if you wish. No, I need to have some we need council members, but you could put it on if you want, right? And finally, he acknowledged he could put it on if he wanted, and he said he wouldn't do it unless he got three council members and a staff report.
Oh, so this is not a procedure, because that's what, didn't she say that in the city council chamber?
Well, that's the next
all
thing.
All of us? That's the impression I got.
Well,
that was the procedural rule they had to follow.
That's the next thing that happened.
That's just an excuse.
The next thing,
that's just an excuse for not doing it.
Well, the next thing that happened was at the December 4th meeting on Tuesday, 2 days ago, she, you know, I stood up and I essentially said, David, and council members Terrazas and council member Brown seem to be, someone is either has forgotten or is not telling us the truth about
right.
these issues, and that's a concern of mine. So Sandy Brown then replied from her chair afterward. She said, well, I talked to Robert about this on the 27th, which was when there was the big heated meeting about
right.
But she didn't. She never talked to me. So she's either not remembering properly or she's not stating the truth intentionally. I don't know which. At least I certainly don't remember her talking to me. Maybe I've got a memory problem. You know, who knows? I mean, we're all older than
old. I can verify that. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. And so you were outside the chambers when some of this happened at this meeting Tuesday. She said that she was... She had talked to the city manager about it, and she had informed the public about it. Actually, at the beginning of the November 27th meeting, she asked the city attorney whether she could put on the agenda an emergency item, and he said no. Now, to me, that is not attempting to put an emergency item on the agenda. And in fact, she seemed to be doing that in a kind of an apologetic manner and using the city attorney as cover. I mean, that was my impression.
Well, that could be. But did he actually say that? I mean, she can't just put... That's what I'm wondering. Can she just put it on if she wants to? Apparently not. It has to be the mayor, right?
Well, in terms of the agenda, yes. But in terms of bringing it up at the council meeting, she can bring it up and try to get a vote on it. Now, Micah Posner, a former council member, suggested that, no, she did try to put it on, and it was voted down. I don't think that's what happened. But, frankly, I've gotten, you know, overwhelmed by other events, and I haven't really followed up on that. So that really is, I mean, to me, I like to see people using whatever procedural and extra procedural devices they can get to deal with the obvious, which is that the council is generally, progressives included, generally pretty unresponsive to the needs of poor people, and particularly of people who are outside without shelter. And that
I know that's your issue, and that's true, but it's also the entire middle class of Santa Cruz there. You know, with this library and the they're taking away the farmer's market. They're going to put it into, they're going to shoehorn it into a very small area of the bus station. Like, it's going to fail there. There's going to only be half the booths. And they're, of course, they're not telling the public that. Nobody even realizes that. Oh, it's going to all be fine is all you ever hear. That's what I mean. This whole government is just lying to the regular people, and it's not just the homeless that are getting screwed. It's everyone listening to your show, unless they're one of the 1%. It's the 1% that's getting everything. We essentially have Republicans masquerading as progressives on our city council. They don't really have a party, but if they did have a party, if they would have to put the party that they're acting as, it would all be thrown out, because Santa Cruz is a very democratic, liberal area, and these people are really Republicans masquerading as liberals.
Hmm. Well, you know, at the Huff meeting yesterday, we had a Huff meeting where Elise Cadman brought up the issue of, she was very concerned about another item that will be on the December 11th agenda, but which isn't being talked about a lot, which is the massive redevelopment of the downtown with four-story buildings along between Pacific and Front, and she felt this was a real slap in the face to the community. It was an attack on both renters and unhoused people, because it would mean that nobody could afford anything in a few years in town, and she wanted to raise the issue and get a lot of people, even the extent of, if necessary, forcing that issue to be postponed until, you know, our heroes and the four horsemen of the apocalypse could come riding in January, you know, the new council members, and, you know, hopefully do something different. And so she may be sending me a flyer wording for a flyer she wants me to distribute. There's also a meeting tonight of the Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness run by Brent Adams at his day and night storage over at 150 Felker Street, Suite H, for those who want to go to it.
Yeah, he's doing great work there. I went to his party, but it's like, you know, that place is like no drugs on the area. Everything's got to be clean. No news.
Well, let me finish this first, though, that it's 7:30 to 9 o'clock tonight, Thursday night. If anybody wants to go, that's available. He got angry with me and hung up. He got angry with me and hung up on a phone call, so I couldn't get a lot more information. But, you know, I'd say it's worth going to if anyone is interested.
Yeah, it's great. The neighbors all love him, though. They came into that party I went to.
I heard about that.
Yeah, it was great. I'm really impressed. He's saving lives. He's actually reversing what Monica did by tearing up all the storage units, even the ones outside that had nothing to do with the medical bays.
And you're talking about Monica Martinez, formerly of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, who is now the head of what's it called, Enchanted Ensemble, the group that oversees the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and a bunch of
Yeah. What was it? The umbrella group, whatever. She screwed up there. She just, you know, did a whole makeover there and, you know, gave away all their furniture, and they don't really have offices.
I don't know what she's doing there, but I never was too happy with her.
Encompass.
On the Homeless Lack of Services Center. So, well,
completely incompetent. But anyways, that costs lives. You know, when people lose their, you know, place to store their sleeping bag, the police and Parks and Rec grab those sleeping bags and they come back to get it, and all of a sudden they're freezing in the cold in December. We have, 50, 60 deaths every year from people of the homeless community, and I think the majority of those are from the cold, aren't they? Although I'm told that any time there's drugs involved, they attribute it to drugs, even if hypothermia.
It's hard to find them actually making a finding of hypothermia, but they do, I think, occasionally on some cases. I mean,
it's
politically controversial, I would think, to do that. The person to talk to in that is Becky Johnson, who was reviewing that for the last few years when she lived in Santa Cruz, but she's no longer around, as you know. But she may have an item on that. There's also, I understand that Chief...
Well, long story short, though, Robert, from a personal point of view, there's no drugs on the property, so I couldn't really party there, so I had to leave early.
I see. But you always go outside and, you know, puff out in the bushes.
No, not there. See, that's the whole point of it. He's trying to keep...
Well, you just, you walk a block, you know, come on.
There you go. Well, even at the Sub Rosa, you have to go outside, you know. They assert property even there, although they call it state.
Yeah, I hear you. In any case, there is going to be a meeting next week at the Sub Rosa. I had a discussion with Cynthia Berger of the Santa Cruz Tenants Association. She wants to see a coalition between those who are outside, the unhoused, and renters around issues of, you know, fighting for essentially eviction protection, rent control, I don't know, rent freezes, rent strikes. I'm not sure exactly where it's going. There's going to be a meeting where the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, normally is, next week on Wednesday, the day after the city council meeting. That will be what she calls eviction day, because that will be the day that the council did nothing to extend the freeze, as she sees it.
What time is this meeting on Wednesday?
11 o'clock, the usual time when Huff has its Wednesday meeting.
Is there another radical group ahead of your group now at the Sub Rosa?
No, it was just, it's the Tenants Association infiltrating us and taking over the Huff scene. Hey, we're mixing together. We're a coalition. Let's be...
There was another group, too.
There's a group called Conscience in Action, which is sort of, it seems to be somewhat defunct, but maybe not. Maybe it's simply just sort of on vacation. I don't know.
One of those flash-in-the-pan groups. Okay.
Well, they came in, they did something about bathrooms at Loudoun Nelson, and they tried to do a protest on the 15th around the issue of the winter shelter hoax, that there was no real winter shelter for people other than this makeshift deal.
Did they get the bathrooms opened at San Lorenzo?
Very briefly, yeah.
But then San Lorenzo got closed.
And San Lorenzo goes again. And apparently
now they can't run a bathroom, now can't run a park either.
Mm.
Well, is there anything else?
Well, I did notice there was a thriving community behind Ross, though.
Yeah, now that was apparently Andy Mills was out there yesterday or the day before talking to the group. And I, if you hear anything about that caller, let me know because I'd like to.
I just walked by it, and there were porta potties there.
Yeah, there are two of them. The last time I was there, yeah.
Whose jurisdiction is that? Is that state land there? That's the question.
I don't know. I'm not aware that it is. If it is, so can't say.
Because it's along a freeway, right? I mean, the freeway is state highway patrol.
It's right. It's next to the freeway, but it also
when she was on the freeway.
Yeah, I don't know what the story is with that, but I know that it's expanded to 60 to 80 tenths when I was down there a couple days ago. And they do have a hand-washing station, and there seem to be a lot of garbage cans around. And
they need some kind of...
You can hear more about it by listening to the show, probably.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I guess that is it. I think I don't have anything else to react to.
Yeah, well, remember, these issues with the library may be changed with the council majority, because you
That's what I'm thinking. I don't really have to do much on that. If there's two liberals coming, who's coming in now? I'm getting different.
You have three.
Well, I know another issue. I heard recently some gossip here. That part of the reason that the homeless, you know, they got that camp behind Ross and they had San Lorenzo last year is because we have a police chief with less oink in him or something, and that they stopped harassing quite as much and allowed these kind of camp things to happen. And I heard that the reason, or I guess the former was retiring anyways, but part of the reason him and Steve Clark were kind of escorted out because of the bear cat. And now this is just a rumor, but is there anything to that?
Yeah, I don't know. I know that the thing that I noticed before former Chief Vogel retired, so to speak, was that he made the it was revealed that he had allowed an ICE agent, that is, a Department of Homeland Security agent, not sure which,
to
maintain a desk in the Santa Cruz Police Department for 9 years previously, and he'd also been cooperating with ICE. That's immigration control and enforcement in going after
people that are kidnapping children on the borders. Our police should be arresting them for kidnapping.
In going after people here in Santa Cruz as well, which, you know, I guess provoked a lot of outrage at the city council meeting in February of last year. Anyway.
So that was it then. It was that. Steve Clark got kicked out for that.
No, I think Steve left earlier, but I'm not sure. I don't know where he got kicked out. Maybe he did. I don't know. I'm going to have to roll because I got to get this show up, but anything you want to conclude with?
No, that was it. That's what I'm saying is keep up the good work, Robert, because I can never find these things out otherwise.
Well, if you get to if you get to 150 Felker tonight between 7:30 and 9, let me know how things go.
I can't really go. I can't smoke there. I'm sorry.
Well, you know.
All right, see you later.
All right, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And for those who are new, some of those references may be a little arcane. The Bearcat, of course, is a sort of a dressed-down kind of tank that the police department got without really going through a city council process, and that upset a lot of people in the community, but not enough to get it sent back. That's too bad. Steve Clark was the deputy chief of police for a number of years. I knew him back in 1988 when he was just an officer on the beat who was bullying people back then. And he didn't really change as he rose in the ranks. Perhaps that's why he did rise in the ranks. Who knows? Well, let's get a bit of music, and we'll continue with snippets, tippets, and drippets. We'll be right back.
their feet in nets, a stone's throw away from a rock fight. But not tonight, beat them dead. And then comes another ration. Cause then a fight has been a nation. But there's nothing that the beat up with. It's freedom. But it's dead.
And that's Let Them Eat War by Bad Religion. And tip of the hat to Merlin for passing that song on to me. It's a little hard to hear some of the lyrics, but those I catch sound like something I agree with. So what can I say? And last night, Julia Vinograd, the Berkeley poet known as the Bubble Lady, died at age 75. Here's a story about her from Berkeley's side. Julia was a poet whose works I assiduously collected, and I interviewed her numerous times on free radio. Whenever I go up to Berkeley, at least once a year, she'd come up with a book every year since the 70s, the early 70s, maybe the late 60s. Here's what Berkeleyside, the online website, has to say about her. She was Berkeley's poet laureate, and she was the Bubble Lady. Born in 1943, Vinograd got her B.A. at Cal and then earned an M.A. at the University of Iowa at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. Her studies focused on poetry. Literary and creative influences she cited include William Butler Yeats, Eleanor Wiley, Federico Garcia Lorca in English, Leonard Cohen as a poet, and Yehuda Amachi. While at Cal, she was taught and inspired by Tom Gunn, Gary Snyder, and Josephine Miles. In Iowa, Virginia says, Paul Carroll blew the lid off of all my safety boxes. Most of these people I don't know, but perhaps some of you out there do. Vinograd returned to Berkeley in 1967, to find massive cultural and political changes in full swing. Everyone had long hair, bare feet, bright clothes, and looked like they just stepped out of a tapestry. Telegraph Avenue was her stomping ground, her nation. She lived at the Berkeley Inn and spent her days at the Café Med, drinking coffee and watching the world pass by. She described the first years of writing in Berkeley. I decided Telegraph was Desolation Row, and I liked it that way. I was in total culture shock. I scuttled around with my mouth and my notebook both open, staring at what I saw and trying to write everything down at once. I forgot about writing styles and just wrote. I didn't want any of it to get away. The poetry continued honoring the lost, the misfits, the downtrodden, the abandoned, the wild, and the free. She was called a street poet. I'm not sure what that means, unless it means that she wrote about the street in the figurative sense of the lower socioeconomic strata. I know this. She was for decades part of Berkeley's cultural DNA. She wrote 50 volumes of poetry, actually more. I think it was between 50 and 60, much of which is about Berkeley. She probably only could have existed in Berkeley. And then there was Julia Vinograd, the Bubble Lady. During the People's Park uprising in May 1969, Vinograd was troubled by a sense of impending violence. She lived right on Telegraph Avenue, the artery that bled so profusely on May 15, 1969. In a moment that evoked Allen Ginsberg, Vinograd bought some bubble soap and went to Telegraph Avenue to blow bubbles. It set a tone. It helped defuse. And she did it for the rest of her life. She was known to generations of Cal students simply as the Bubble Lady. Julia Vinograd lived with her life with Dylan's Desolation Row as the soundtrack. Berkeley and Telegraph Avenue of the last 50 years swirling around her, saints and angels and martyrs and holy men. Julia Vinograd made real for us those who are wanting and lacking and forgotten and invisible. She did this with humor and verve, and as Herb Cain would say, brio. In her poem, On the Berkeley Inn, where I've lived for 15 years being torn down, she wrote, Were we all crazy? Mostly we were friends, and with friends, it's not a pertinent question. In 2004, Berkeley honored Vinograd with a Lifetime Achievement Award. City Councilman Chris Worthington presented the proclamation to her at the Berkeley Poetry Festival. When Vinograd was diagnosed with cancer, her friends started a GoFundMe campaign to raise funds for her medical care. Poets, writers, and friends also came together on November 11th at the Art House Gallery and Cultural Center to help raise money to help her. When Julia and her sister Debbie were girls, they sat by a Ming lamp in their grandfather's house. The girls thought that the lamp's name was Ming. Julia made up stories about Ming's life. There were five green marbles. Julia told Debbie stories about the marbles. Debbie came to Berkeley in 1973 to see her sister Julia and stayed, painting as Julia wrote poetry. Debbie sat with Julia the night she died, somewhere in that room, were Ming and the five marbles. This is a story by Tom Dolzell, a labor lawyer who created a website, Quirky Berkeley, to share all the whimsical objects he has captured with his iPhone. He also writes important figures about important figures of Berkeley's past, such as his 2017 Quirky Berkeley Post and Berkeley Side Post about Julia Vinaigrette. In 2019, Heyday Press will publish his The Battle for People's Park, Berkeley, 1969, which includes a poem and reminiscences about Julia. And I may be reading more of her poetry. Here is one of her poems called Crackdown from a disc, Bones of the Homeless.
Crackdown on street teenagers. The young street kids aren't violent or crazy or screaming. They just sit around cuddling puppies and each other. They'd have to stand up to bother anyone, and it's too much trouble. They share crumbling, day-old donuts and black nail polish, and I write about them. The city just sent a big police presence to arrest my poems. There's two cop cars on the avenue, three if you count the one that went up the block, a pair patrolling the sidewalk, and a huge black paddy wagon that I think I saw in an Al Capone movie. All this to arrest my poems, and I can't go downtown and get them back eventually the way people do with a towed-away car. The sidewalk is unconvincingly clear. There should be kids in black T-shirts and spiked leather bracelets occasionally slapping a broken string guitar. There should be a girl with orange dreadlocks and beads beating her small drum with her belly button. There should be a boy drawing happy monsters on the pavement with colored chalk. The city says teenagers block doorways and are bad for business. But poetry is my business, and this crackdown is bad for my business.
You can find lots of her stuff on YouTube. Here's one that she read, according to the logo here, on June 9th of this year. Actually, she read a bunch of them, but this is one of her poems.
Jailhouse ballad. I can't bail my country out of jail. Its teeth are sharp as eagle's claws, but the laws are stronger than iron bars. My country's out of cigarettes. Oh, bring it cigarettes, though I tried to get it to stop smoking because of cancer. But my country threw back its head and howled, I'm bigger and badder than cancer. That's why I'm in jail. They're all jealous of me. My country doesn't quite remember me. I'm just someone who visits. I'll also bring some flowers from an apple tree where my country sang me songs long ago, before anything went wrong.
And here's one more.
Hold on to love. When even the stars are teeth about to bite and the moon is stained with blame, when armies rattle like readying beasts and children cry at night because they see too much, hold on to love, cling to each other. Lovers forget the world, but in these dark days when the world is scraped, elbows, stubbed toes, handcuffed souls, and all directions lost, when everything hurts, hold on to love. Love is the only light left in the world, and the world you forget needs light. There are too many sharks swimming down the street, and there's a hateful cold much worse than winter. Lovers, make each other warm, the world you forget need you now.
Oh, wow.
Many's the hour I've lain by my window and thought of the people who've carried the burdens, who marched into strange fields in search of an answer and ended their journeys an unwilling hero. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. Back in the coal fields of old Harlan County, some talked of a union, some talked of good wages, and they lined them up in the dark of the forest and shot them down without asking no questions. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. And over the ocean to the red Spanish soil came the Lincoln Brigade with their dreams of a victory, but they fell in the fire of Germany's bombings, and they fell 'cause nobody would hear their sad warning. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. In old Alabama, in old Mississippi, two states of the Union so often found guilty, they came on the buses, they came on the marches, and they lay in the jails, or they fell by the highways. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. The state, it was Texas, the town, it was Dallas. In the flash of a rifle, a life was soon over, and nobody thought of the past million murders, and the long list of irony had found a new champion. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die.
And that singer Phil Oakes, Toast to Those Who Are Gone. I'm not too happy with his happy talk about JFK or his mourning talk about JFK. Frankly, another one in the line of war criminal presidents in my view. But he's got a sweet voice, and I'll be playing another song or two of his before the show is over. Let's turn now to something coming up. I'm going to play at least part of, if not the entire, interview with Cynthia Berger of the Santa Cruz Tenants Association. I'm hoping that I'm pretty sure it's audible. The question is, I'm hoping that the references don't fly too thick and fast. But hopefully we'll be able to get something out of it, and here goes. So it's December 6th, 2018, around 11, and I'm on the line with Santa Cruz Tenants Association. I got that right, Cynthia?
Yes.
Activist Cynthia Berger, who has been at this for, I don't know, what is it, 2 or 3 years now doing the tenants' rights work?
4 years.
Okay. And recently, of course, a lot of work on Measure M, and I've seen you occasionally at City Council speaking on behalf. You got 4 minutes. Everybody else got two. Well, I got four, too. But
well, I requested ahead of time, so folks who are part of an organization can request from the mayor to have 4 minutes at the beginning of
right. Well, I found sometimes they do that for me and sometimes they don't. But Terrazas has been pretty good about that, strangely enough.
Well, here's what they do. They have public comments, and then they have comments about the item. And if you speak at comments about the item and they give you 4 minutes, then they don't allow you to speak at the public comment.
Right, but
the jury spoke.
Some of the mayors have been worse. They've said,
oh,
well, if you want to represent an organization, no one else in that organization can talk during that time. That's what Coonerty tried to do, the younger Coonerty, when he was mayor.
Oh.
He was a bad boy. But you got to talk. You know, there have been a couple meetings, and there'll be another one coming up next Tuesday, which could be a pretty important and heated meeting. You want to kind of review what's happened in the last two meetings and what's coming up?
Maybe you can explain this to me, but the new council members get sworn in at 7 o'clock, but I don't believe they get to vote at that meeting.
You know, it's a good question. I don't have a definitive answer, but I had thought, why do you think they
don't? I wish a large boot would appear on the end of a folding bracket and just kick out the ones who are no longer going to be there and allow the new ones.
That's harsher than a hook.
Large Doc Martens boot on the end of a...
But I don't know the answer to your question, though. I mean, I think if they wanted to, they could agendize something. They could have something on the agenda that they could talk about. And I'm getting the impression somehow, I'm not sure where I'm getting it from, that that is what they want to do. But I haven't talked to any of the council members who will be part of the new council about that. So I don't know, but it's a very good question.
Well, unfortunately, the new mayor is not a friend of renters, and that will be Martine Watkins.
Mm-hmm.
So they can try to agendize it, and we'll see what happens. So maybe there will be a free-for-all. Well, I really doubt it. Genteel people who are elected to the council.
That brings up the question that I raised at the last council meeting publicly, actually, which is to say, can a mayor of her or his own accord simply put an item on the agenda if they want? And then what's the procedure if they're refusing to do it? And we got a false answer from, I guess it was from Sandy Brown. She said that, in essence, I don't know if we got, if she said it at that.
Well, no, I think that they told you that if three people vote for it, then it can be on the agenda.
Right. Well, the issue, though, is whether a mayor can do it as a matter of...
I do believe they can. I believe that's one of the powers that they can put it on. But and then if they don't want to put it on, if three members vote to put it on, then they have to put it on even though they don't want to.
I think you're right. Can you hold for just a moment?
Uh-huh.
No, go away. We're back, Cynthia. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So the question arises, could three members, could three individuals who are about to be elected write up, you know, a request, you know, put an item on the agenda, demand, first request Martine Watkins, who will be the new mayor, to put the item on the agenda. And then if she refuses, simply come together as a group before they are sworn in, or maybe have it ready to present as a requested emergency item. And they don't need, I think, to have it on the agenda as an emergency item before... they don't need five votes before.
I think it gets until they've discussed it twice in public.
I mean, it gets put on the agenda, and then they need five votes to pass it. But I think to put it on the agenda, it through an obstreperous mayor, probably only requires three. I've asked Bonnie Bush, the city administrator clerk, to send me the specific rules, which she said she would do verbally, and I also followed it up with an email recently. But nothing has come through yet. But I think it's a very good question. But what's what's the background?
Even if they put it on the agenda, Robert, they have to discuss it twice in public before they can vote on it.
Well, it depends. If they do it as an emergency item, they can vote on it then. And what
you
I'm saying,
don't have to discuss it more than once. Are you sure?
Yeah, an emergency item can be discussed once, and it can also then be voted on. That's why it's called an emergency. But of course,
the problem is it's not an emergency ordinance unless five people vote for it, Robert.
That's what I was saying. But to discuss.
So they could pass an ordinance that wouldn't take effect for a month. That's probably what's going to happen.
Well,
in that month, everybody's going to get their rents raised and evicted.
Well, you see, that's I think the pressure on the mayor, the new mayor, who will now be in a minority position to some extent, because she has four votes against her in the new seven-person council on some issues, particularly on the rent issue, the rent and just eviction protection. So she may feel pressured to act on it, because you may remember that back in February, the council passed unanimously this temporary rent freeze and just eviction protection that lasted through the election.
No, they didn't pass they didn't pass the rent control unanimously. I mean, they passed it unanimously with those who were allowed to vote, and that was five. So that was bizarre,
right,
frankly.
So that's a good point. They would have had six, probably, with Crone if he could have voted and without...
Well, no, if Crone had been there, Terrazas would have voted against it.
Right, well, so they would have had six anyway, though, right?
They would have five.
They would have
that's
five.
What they need, yeah.
But in any case, they would have had five. The point is, it was enough for an emergency vote at this meeting, too, if they wanted this upcoming meeting on December 11th. Because they will have four people who are newly elected, and then the what I'm saying is no, they don't agree with it, but people who didn't agree with it voted for it anyway, right?
Wait a minute, who's left over besides Watkins and Matthews? Who's the third person that's anti-rent control? Donna Myers.
Chase. Right? Well, Chase is the third person. Chase is off.
Terrazas is off, and Narayan is off.
Good point.
Donna Myers is the pressure point, the person to put pressure on. Now, she came out as anti-rent control campaign.
Okay, but
or at least anti-Measure M.
Right, but Narayan, I believe, voted for the freeze originally back in February. That's my point. And therefore...
Yeah, but they're not going to vote for it again.
Well, the question, though, is, see, the reason they voted for it then was because of all the pressure you and other activists were putting on them with this initiative that made the ballot. Admittedly, you know, they had to...
No, the reason they voted for it then, and I really believe this, is because if they didn't vote for it then, they knew that we were going forward with a rent control campaign, and they knew that it would be tenant slaughter. That's what I think, because that was what I educated them on, about how that has happened in other cities. And once they start having an open discussion about rent control, then the landlords start immediately jacking up rents and evicting people. So that was our argument with them when we spoke to them ahead of time.
Yeah, that's true. But
it wasn't like being a good person. It was like, you want to have this on your conscience.
I understand that, but it's the same argument again, see.
No, because they don't give a shit now, because now they have license, because Martine Watkins said it right in public at the last scheduled meeting. She said, the voters have spoken. And so now she feels that she has license to be who she really is, which is at the behest of the rich, you know, and powerful, apparently, or at least the property owners. She feels no...
She's
never met with tenants. Doesn't meet with students regularly.
Have you had any conversations with her subsequent in the last...
I don't lobby because I
understand, but you had any informal conversations with her?
No.
Okay. You could well be right, Cynthia, and I think your point, the information you're giving, is important. I'm thinking, though, that, see, my thought was that if they had decided, you know, to go against this and not put in a rent freeze, what you say would have happened, but the main point would be that because of all these rent raises, it would have solidified the tenant movement and made it much more radical than it actually was. And that, I think, is the same situation now, because they have essentially, there are four votes for some kind of, you know, renter protection, just eviction protection, and rent.
The renter movement isn't, it's not a renter movement. It's not a renter movement. It's a movement that was started by a small group of people. Half of them weren't even renters. So let's be just, you know, really pretty clear about the real reality. There is now a raised profile of renters thanks to the rent control campaign. And more people are showing up at meetings because now there is a better mailing list of activists. But as far as who is running it and making it happen, people aren't necessarily even know what's going on at the city council. So I don't know. I'm just not clear on how radicalized the tenants are as a body. This is always the problem with tenant as an identity.
You know, I'm not really talking about how radicalized they are, and I think you're right. I think it's the activists who've done this, a small group of activists, of which you were one. But I think the point is, I think the council was afraid of tenants getting activated. And I think whatever the election results, they are also aware that a lot of it had to do with the amount of money and advertising put in by out-of-county sources. And I don't know if they want to risk radicalization of... You're right, I don't think the tenants are radicalized yet, but I think they're sure as hell more likely to be if people start getting evicted. What's your take on that?
Well, yes. And so, they have to, they have to admit that two pro-rent control candidates were elected out of three possible candidates. I mean, that's huge. And that means... I don't know exactly what that means because at the same time Measure M was voted down. So some of the people who voted for pro-rent control candidates were brainwashed that Measure M is a bad, this is what they say about every, this is what the California Apartment Association, talking point is about every rent control measure. Well, rent control is good, but this is a bad measure. They always say that.
Yeah.
Not like Measure M is really especially different.
Well, in answer to your question, though, Cynthia, in answer to the point you're raising.
Oh, I just totally lost my train of thought. But sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to kind of butt in.
My point was.
Well, let me.
I don't know if I don't know what their fear is of renters, but I know there's four people on there who respect renters.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm saying is, I think that
We need to remind them. We need to remind Martine Watkins.
I remember what it was.
Why she passed the rent freeze she voted for it in the first place, because that hasn't gone away.
I remember that. Yeah, I think that's true. But I think I remember what I was trying to say, which is that the reason that M failed and these candidates won was twofold, at least. One of them was that the propaganda that was being pressed did not focus on the candidates. That's number one. And number two, as far as I know.
They didn't want to because then they'd be seen as racist.
Right. Well, whatever.
That was like a brilliant coup.
But in any case, that's one of the reasons that happened, that these two won.
That was an unplanned coup on our part.
And the other one was that they split their votes. They had all these reactionary people running against each other. And, Take Back Santa Cruz fighting with itself and all those.
Right.
So all these.
But there's another reason. We did get a lot of students registered. Students haven't been participating. And we did really spend money on an organizer who was good, who was just graduated student who had been she had been an intern with Tenants Together last year. And she's very good. And, we did activate the student vote, and that, I think, is what put Drew over the top, because the final votes they were counting were same day registered.
Interesting.
And those are students.
Interesting. I'm wondering, though, the point I raised at the council meeting and that I've been occasionally, shouting about or bringing
up.
You've
been great.
Well, thank you. But, what I think needs to be done now is, and I'm not, at all involved in the tenants' rights movement and the way you are, but I think that the kind of, I understand this was being discussed at the last meeting on Monday. I wasn't there. I talked to someone who was. That what's needed is something like what, Communist Party people did in the 30s in New York when they started evicting people and picked their furniture out of their house. The people who were tenant supporters said, no way, we'll put it right back. And the kind of stuff that was being done, like frontal line action in Oakland that saved the Housing and Dignity Village. I don't know if you heard about that. That was in today's paper. The city said, you can't be in this cleaning.
Yeah,
let me finish it.
What I'm saying is, it's not going to happen here.
Well, I hear you, but I think, in other words, they stood. And these are larger urban areas where you have more people to, much larger to rely on. Although, that kind of thing has happened in Santa Cruz in the past in some circumstances.
Yes, and I know the Students United with Renters are interested in figuring out how to do things like this, but Zoff, who I've worked closely with as a tenant counselor, we understand we're up against a lot of tenant fear because And this is where tenants and homeless people should be working together, right?
Right.
Because tenants are afraid to stand up all the time. They're afraid because they just don't have the power. But we hope that we've got a few more, you know, I think we got some more housing activists through this campaign process and people learning more about, and you know, how about these people living in a rent freeze and seeing how great it is to have rent control and getting 40% of the voters to vote for it the first time it's on the ballot in 30 years. To me, that was, you know, so that's building. You have to build the tenant base. It takes time.
I'm going down the Mississippi. Oh, I'm going down a southern road. And if you never see me again, remember that I had to go. Remember that I had to go. It's a long road down the Mississippi. It's a short road back the other way. If the cops pull you over to the side of the road, oh, you won't have nothing to say. No, you won't have nothing to say. There's a man waiting down in Mississippi, and he's waiting with a rifle in his hand. And he's looking down the road for an out-of-state car, and he thinks that he's fighting for his land. Yes, he thinks that he's fighting for his land. And he won't know the clothes that I'm wearing, and he doesn't know the name that I own. But his gun is large and his hate is hard, and he knows I'm coming down the road. Yes, he knows I'm coming down the road. Oh, it's not for the glory that I'm leaving. It's not trouble that I'm looking for. But there's lots of good work that's a-calling me down, and the waiting won't do no more. No, the waiting won't do no more. Don't call me the brave one for going. No, don't pin a medal to my name. Or even if there was any choice to make, I'd be going down just the same. I'd be going down just the same. For someone's got to go to Mississippi, just as sure as there's a right and there's a wrong. And even though you say that the time will change, that time is just too long. That time is just too long. So I'm going down the Mississippi. Oh, I'm going down a southern road. And if you never see me again, remember that I had to go. Remember that I had to go.
And that was I'm Going Down to Mississippi, or just plain old Going Down to Mississippi, Phil Oakes, song from the 60s. Back now to my conversation with Cynthia Berger of the Santa Cruz Tenants Association.
Is there any tendency, though, or any movement, do you think, that if, as you suggest might well happen, there isn't a fifth vote for an emergency ordinance on the 11th, and it gets delayed, requires two readings, and then another month to go into effect? I think that's what it is. It gets two readings, then a month later it goes into effect. So that's 2 months away. I could be wrong about that, but it's at least a month away. If then, during that period of time, you know, rents are raised, people start getting kicked out, is there any support, do you think, to defend those people who are getting kicked out? Any you know, anyway, in terms of protests, raising issues?
It isn't an organized thing. I mean, I've reached out to Students United with the renters, because I know that Zav Hirschfield has you know, is interested in these kinds of actions, but it, you know, it isn't easy to get. The thing is, you can't do that for people. They have to do it for themselves, Robert. That's the thing. You know, I mean, you can do certain things for people, but you can't do a rent strike for people. They have to withhold their rent. But as far as, like, I've been talking about, can we organize, like, an eviction protection collective and stuff like that. I've been trying to bring people to town from San Francisco. Like, there's a woman named Fred who's amazing, and they're with a housing, I forget what it's called. Like, there's so many groups up there, but there's a really great group, and they do things like this to try to help prevent people from getting evicted. And there's a lot of different tactics. I've been to some trainings on them. Yeah, we need an eviction collective.
Do you have a phone tree yet for that? I mean, something where you can call on people to come out.
Group of people who are, you know, able to do this stuff like they have in the Bay Area. Even if you have a little core group of 30 people, you can't get that in Santa Cruz. You can get a little core group of 5 people.
Right, no, I know. But do you have, as I said before, a phone tree where you can actually, at least you can call a great number of people and some of them will show up and to, you know, with picket signs?
We don't have something where we can be sure some of them will show up.
Or you can at least hope some of them show up. I mean, do you have a phone tree where you can at least inform people of what's going on?
Well, I don't. But the rent control campaign does, but they haven't shared that with me, with us, the tenant organizers.
Now, are they more concerned?
I think we need to work on that.
Yeah, no, I understand. Is there a lot of, you know, I know some of the folks in the rent movement are more conservative, the rent control movement are more conservative than others. What do you think is necessary? You're mentioning just more organizing this.
Well, there's a bunch of different movements that we're talking about. There's the rent control, you know, that's an ongoing process. And then there's eviction protection, that's entirely different, you know, kind of group of people. And so, you know, again, it's just finding the right people who want to do that stuff. I think we talked, you know, we have more likelihood right now if we could use that. You know, maybe we should try to send out some stuff over that. But I find it hard working with certain people who work slowly. You know, for me, I want to work more quickly. Some people are cautious like a tortoise, slow and cautious mm-hmm. in their work and enjoy working with their small group. And I'm more like, you know, want to get things done.
Got to reach out.
I'm impatient, and I would like to get tenant organizers working together. And now we have, you know, there's not one group, Robert.
Now there was an issue that came up at the Huff meeting yesterday. People wanted to, you know, form sort of coalitions with renters. It actually came up last week too. And I mentioned that, well, you know, there's been a number of speakers of city council who talked about how important, you know, the fact that there's a huge homeless population, it's growing, and there's no shelter, all this shit, which is all true.
Here's something they can do.
Wait. Let me finish this.
Okay.
But the question, I guess, is, I didn't want to throw cold water on what folks were saying. Because I think, you know, it's really important if people can. I said, well, good, go to the renter meetings, you know, and join and see if they're let you in. You know, I know there's a certain, you don't want to.
Well, it's called the Movement for Housing Justice.
Yeah.
And this is what I was going to say. I would like to, there's a steering committee that's left over from the campaign, from the rent control campaign. And I want to add a lot of new people to that because those folks were wanting to meet regularly, and so I can add more people to that group and we can have a more interesting conversation possibly.
Mm-hmm. So can people I was saying that for me it's always important to have
people that I am willing to say publicly is that I have been advocating for this for quite a while, that the city should have a department that is tenant services all in under one person who oversees it and is not anti-tenant, like not somebody from the economic development department, and
you
they can
not Robert Singleton.
Yeah, right. But they should be able to have under a tenant services like emergency rental assistance and tenants' rights hotline and any other things. Like, I think there should be a website, a communications website for renters. They're 60% of the city, and on that there should be a variety of things that renters can look up, including housing issues that are coming up at meetings that they might want to weigh in on as renters, because housing is being planned for renters that renters have no say in, and it's at prices that renters can't afford. So, you know, that's another part of just renter services.
That's something else I want to talk to you about. But before I get into that, do you want me to give out your number for people to call if they want to be a part of this possible new steering committee that you're working on?
Absolutely. That would be great.
So give out your number.
And I especially would like to invite also people who are living in their vehicles.
Well, good. Give us a number that people should call.
Okay, so the hotline that you can, everybody can reach me at, and if I don't pick it up, I'll get a transcription of your voice message as a text sent to me right away, which is really helpful.
Interesting.
Sometimes I'm on the phone. The number is, Santa Cruz Tenants' Rights Hotline is 831-222-0359. So 831-222-0359. And if you look up Santa Cruz Tenants, you'll get my website, and my email is there too, santacruztenants@gmail.com. So it's all on my website. Just look up Renters' Rights in Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz Tenants, and you'll find my website.
I mean, there is a meeting tonight, for example, of the coalition, Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness, run by Brent Adams. That is 150 Felker Street area where he does storage. He does the day and night storage program, and he's looking for he's interested in homelessness and, you know, ways to address emergency shelter this winter, like the Ross campground and so forth. But that might be a place. It would be great to see some tenant activists showing up.
Yes, I'm planning on going to that, Robert.
Excellent.
Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, and
when is that meeting?
That is at 7:30 tonight. Is that right? 7:30 to 9 tonight at 150 Felker Street for anyone listening. I'll be playing this tonight at 6, so people can still get down there if they want.
Is that a house or a business?
It's a series of businesses, and you would go to Suite H.
Okay, 150. And it's further down the street, or is it right on the corner across from Denny's?
Oh, it's way down the street. If you ever were here during the Camp Paradise time, I'm not sure if you were or not. It's near where the entrance to Camp Paradise, it's where you come off the pedestrian bridge that goes across the river.
But it's the same street that's the last street off of Ocean Street past Denny's.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, that's great to hear. I mean, that's one of the things I was grousing about at the Huff meeting yesterday was we never get tenant activists. Well, we actually did have a tenant activist, kind of, someone who was interested in tenant activism, but who isn't actually an official tenant activist at the last meeting.
Well, I'm sort of an activist, and I'm also a counselor because the hotline, I just answer people's questions. That's pretty easy. That's not like...
You're an activist, Cynthia.
What I do on the hotline is not. It is simply dealing with people who are traumatized. They're not activists.
Right, but
call my hotline.
Well, you could be an activist.
Not activist.
You could be an activist who's helping people who are traumatized.
Yes. I mean, that's just part of what I do.
Sure.
But the hotline is, I can get help on the hotline. I'm going to wind it down. I can't do this anymore.
Uh-huh.
So it's too much time, and I'm not getting paid, and I need money.
What are the
so
chances?
If I don't get paid by the city, this hotline is going to go away unless.
What are the chances of, you mentioned an organizer who had helped you pull the campaign together, a student organizer. Is that likely to continue? Can that person be pulled in, or?
The student group opted not to run the hotline as in the same way that I do, which is, you know, it took me a few years to build my number, and they have some other number that hardly anybody ever calls, or they feel people like if they run into people. So they haven't embraced the idea of running the hotline, and that's Students United with Renters, and the person I was referring to is associated with that group.
Is Movement for Housing Justice, is that a cover group or a separate group from Students
United? Movement for Housing Justice was really the coalition that formed to start the rent control campaign, but as people were having discussions at the beginning of the coalition, some of us said, we don't want to just do a rent control campaign. You have to have a tenant base. We're doing a rent control campaign without having built a tenant base. so therefore, you know, an aside, I didn't expect to win because you have to have incentive base to win.
Mm-hmm.
But so we said, so we want to make our mission dual. One is, okay, we're going to run a rent control campaign. So we did that. That's over. Now we have to have a new mission. But the other mission that we have that's ongoing is to organize renters in the city of Santa Cruz. And that's kind of a vague mission.
Well, again, as I'm saying, I'm thinking the one good place to start is trying to raise publicity and issues for essentially tenants who get evicted in the next month if they delay this crap.
I know, but there's not a switchboard, and there's not money to publicize it. Now, I don't know how to publicize that. I have a hotline. You know, people call me because they're in trouble, not because they want to add data to a database. So, you know, we didn't have money. You know, it takes money to publicize stuff. I'm not a publicist, so I don't know how to do that. So
I
don't want to spend my time doing that because I spend a lot of time.
Right, no one's saying. No one's saying.
My problem is, it's great to throw ideas out there, but how are you going to publicize
that? Yeah, right. No, I understand.
It'd be easier for me to find someone to make that data.
Well, that's the issue. You have a bunch of people left over from the rent control or tenant, you know, mobilizing campaign, and presumably you guys are having another meeting soon, and I mean there'll be certainly a large number of people coming on the 11th, who are going to be saying that, and there'll be something will happen or won't happen on the 11th that will mean there's either an immediate crisis or at least a freeze and a delay in the.
Why don't you and I call a meeting?
I'll come to any meeting you want to call.
I mean, at that next meeting, why don't you and I plan a meeting and announce it? Because
we're back on the stream again here, Cynthia. You were going to talk about what?
Yes.
The rent control scene now. What's coming up on the 11th? What's been happening?
Yeah. What's on the menu for the next couple of years? I would like to just briefly say we had a very short timeline for this rent control campaign, and I and a couple of other people, knowing the history and what it takes, didn't expect to win, so I wasn't disappointed. I was happy we got 40% of the vote. But that doesn't stop here, because a rent control fight takes approximately 3 years before you can get it passed at the ballot, which is what we want. So now we're going to go through some iterations of city council putting out rent control through 2020, trying to put out things, and they'll be challenged with a referenda by the California Apartment Association as soon as the new city council makes any kind of rent control with teeth. Then they, you know, I expect that to be overturned. And anyway, it's my job that I see it, if I want to see rent control in the city of Santa Cruz, is to continue organizing tenants and educating people about what rent control is as they have experienced it under the rent freeze. And that's pretty good rent control, not excellent. So now we're continuing to work together and have a coalition, and we will be meeting Santa Cruz Tenants Association and Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We'll start meeting in coalition, and we will be inviting Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom to become a coalition partner for housing justice, which is has as a mission to organize tenants for political power.
Go ahead.
So we're going to have a meeting to start off the conversation on Eviction Day. So Eviction Day is December 12th. And the reason it's called Eviction Day is because that is the day after the rent freeze in the city of Santa Cruz has lapsed, and those protections will no longer be available to tenants that have been available for the past nearly a year because the city council refused to extend them so far. We have hopes that the new city council will extend those protections, but we're predicting there's a very high likelihood that there will be at least a 30-day period where there's no protections aside from the normal, very few protections under California state law. So I'm calling that Eviction Day. I want people to know this. And I also would like to let anyone who hears this know that you please call the Santa Cruz Tenants Association hotline if you hear of anyone who's getting evicted, who would have been protected under the rent freeze, but even if they're just getting evicted at all in the next any time from now on, if because we want to keep track of how many evictions are happening. There's no good way to do that, but because a lot of evictions are just a notice to vacate and people move along, and so that doesn't get reported anywhere. So please report all notices to vacate to the Santa Cruz Tenants Association hotline, and that's 831-222-0359. And you can just leave your report there, and I'll get it. I'll note it down.
And repeat that number again, Cynthia.
Yes, 831-222-0359.
Okay.
And so that's eviction day, December 12th. December 11th, and we're going to have our meeting, the coalition building. We're going to discuss that at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 11 a.m., and that's on the corner of Pacific Avenue at Sycamore Street on Wednesday, December 12th. That's the corner of Pacific Avenue and Sycamore Street by the Bike Church, or there's also a Chinese restaurant there. Oh, the name is escaping me.
Yeah.
Manflower. Yeah,
it's the actual address is 703 Pacific, and I'm never clear if that street is Sycamore or some other tree that starts with S, but you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but I'm pretty sure that's Sycamore. But Sycamore, I think, no.
And it's next to the Bike Church.
One down. I think that might be Pine Street or Spruce or something, because Sycamore is the one that has a brand new apartment on the corner.
Could be, but in any case,
further down.
In any case, it's 703 Pacific. It's next.
703 Pacific.
Yeah,
we're at Lower Pacific Avenue, and we'll be there at 11 a.m. It's called the Sub Rosa Cafe, and it's by the Bike Church.
It certainly is.
And it's down below Laurel Street, a couple blocks.
Yep.
So we'll be there, and anyone, you know, if you're interested in building a coalition between renters and homeless people, please come to this meeting, and we'll discuss how to get involved with the Movement for Housing Justice, who are the folks that put on the rent control campaign. Santa Cruz Tenants Association, that's me. I'm a member of that coalition, and I would like to see many more homeless people involved in the Movement for Housing Justice, of course, so that it truly is, you know, a movement.
For housing justice.
Yeah. So that's
going on.
The rent freeze is lapsing. The new city council will take their seats probably December 11th, and we're trying to figure out the exact mechanics of that and how soon they can call a meeting to extend a rent freeze, even if it could be an emergent special meeting that's sooner than January 8th, which is their next scheduled meeting because of all the holidays. So
I think they can. I think they can force the mayor to do it because they have three members. They can. Well, they can force a meeting. They can force an item on the agenda. But, yeah, we'll see if that happens. And
yes.
Yeah, wind it down, though, because I got a roll on you. But I guess.
Fortunately, they have these stupid rules where they can't make decisions except for at regularly scheduled meetings. So that might be a rule they might need to change in order to protect a lot of renters. But I don't know if that's in the city charter or in the city council rules. But so they could have a special meeting. Let's say they had it 3 days, like next, you know, Friday or something after the city council meeting where they get seated. But they still wouldn't be able to pass action at the special meeting.
So there are,
as I understand it.
So there are two dates to remember. One is Tuesday the 11th, when you might want to show up. Those of you who are interested listening at city council, which I'm not sure at the time I'll be announcing it on Sunday. Usually the agenda doesn't come out until later on Thursday, and this is being recorded early on Thursday. But then the next day, as you were saying, Cynthia, it's 11 o'clock Sub Rosa for this coalition meeting of Huff and the Santa Cruz Renters Association?
Yes, Santa Cruz Tenants Association and any associated folks who want to come, any renters who hear this.
And also, you may be going to this thing at Felker Street that Brent Adams is throwing, the coalition, Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness, which he's and maybe inviting people.
That's
there.
That will be tonight,
actually.
December 6th.
That's right. And people who are listening to this broadcast, it's happening probably within the next hour. So if you want to get to it, you should sort of hustle on down there. If you want to listen to this show and hear more of this interview, well, actually, you've heard the whole interview by now, but more of this show, you can always catch it on the archives. The show is archived on huffsantacruz.org, and so you can go back and hear it all again if you want.
I have one more piece of information.
Go for it.
Have time to share? So I have heard that there are two of the landlords for rent control, that's a little tiny group of about four people, that don't have a website or or Facebook page that I know of, but maybe they do, but they're just a little group of folks who worked on the rent control campaign. They're writing a new rent freeze proposed ordinance, and so I'm wanting to see it and have input and keep people informed as I find out more about that.
Make sure that you don't sell the baby and the bathwater at the same time.
Yeah, right.
Well, Cynthia, thank you. And again, for folks who want to contact you on your hotline, that would be at
831-222-0359. And you can look me up online. If you just look up Santa Cruz Tenants or Renters' Rights in Santa Cruz, you'll come to my website because I'm the only thing there is at this point in time.
Sounds.
I'm a volunteer. I do this all volunteer, so folks know.
Sounds good.
So if they don't expect me to pay, if I don't call them back right away, I don't have a boss lashing me with a whip.
Yeah, certainly not. All right. Thank you, Cynthia. And we'll,
thanks, Robert, for your work.
Yeah, well, you know.
Hey, communications.
You too.
Hey.
Take care, everybody.
Have a good one.
I'm not rich, but I'm wealthy. Yeah. I'm not so strong, but I am fairly healthy, yeah. You might not like what I do, but a different hue. And I'm gonna put all that away. Can we be different way? All we have is today. Oh, can't you see? We sons and daughters, seems like he just on for slaughter. Things don't matter, I'm sure they.
And that was a somewhat ill-fated Donald Trump protest song by Deanne Carroll. Here's some more from, Ricardo Lopez and company.
Okay, well, I'm here in Denny's, and I'm talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
And also his benefactor.
Noel. No, friend, he's the same. He's my benefactor as well.
You're both.
It's usual benefaction.
Yeah. You're both musicians.
Right. Violinist.
How long have you been violinning on the street with this ragamuffin?
No, I don't have my instrument here. It's in Baltimore, but when I have it, I'll be playing here. In the meantime, I've been singing and...
She's been singing and giving quite a great... People love her. Santa Cruz loves her.
So how many hours a day or a week would you say you spend on the street?
He plays starting at about 6. I get there about 7, and we go until about midnight if we can, although 10 o'clock is the noise ordinance, which we obey.
Yeah, you better obey or else, woman. All right, then. So I hear from Mandel and Mark that the
some errant ranger has been harassing you guys.
What this was somebody training another ranger.
Or mistraining, perhaps.
Yeah, mistraining them, because they came out and they said, no soliciting after dark. And I said, when did this start? And they said, oh, this has always been what they've missed. I took the ticket because she said, if you want a ticket. I said, no, I'll take a ticket on this and we're going to fight it. Because it wasn't really her. It's the other guy that's telling her, because he's training her, but she's supposed to give the ticket.
And, of course, you got the names of both people, didn't you?
Yeah, I've got the ticket.
And up next on Free Radio Stream at The Matter, it's important to...
try and push it, because what they usually use that law is so that musicians can have the spaces, so if people are panhandling, they make them quit at dark so that the musicians can get out there and play. And that's what they've used it for.
You've never done solicitation. This fellow has never asked for anything, nor did he have any kind of sign-up, nor does he expect it. He's there to practice at a time where most of us, with our jobs and such, can even meet together.
Very true. And actually,
the character of our city, which is valuable and increases the tourist revenue.
I would have to agree. Actually, I talked to Mandolin Mark about this earlier, and I advised him that the rangers were in error, and because fundamentally when you start out here, the ordinance they're charging you with, if they charge you with panhandling, busking is not panhandling if it's done within the... In fact, busking is never panhandling.
Yeah.
But what is illegal, according to their crazy Santa Cruz laws, is the so-called display device ordinance, which I think is what Mandolin Mark said.
Yeah.
He initially approached Ricardo here on...
The guitar case was there.
Was open, yes. Open guitar case. But let me explain
this. This gentleman has just turned 66. Happy birthday, Ricardo.
Oh, thank you.
And for how fast does somebody have to close their belongings for it to, like, be all right? Whether or not you've just pulled your guitar out and sat down and your case isn't closed, there's no... This
now, did he tell Ricardo to close... Did he tell you to close the case, Ricardo? Or did he just say... Did he say, you're open, we got you?
They told me to close the case.
Now, let me explain this. The display device ordinance says that if you have a display device on Pacific Avenue and several other places in the city, but not universally, and that's it, anything capable of holding tangible things. That's the wording of the ordinance.
Backpack, a purse.
Well, it has to be something that's placed on public property. So if, for example, if you had your guitar, if you had your guitar on a case, if you were holding it in your hand, you had it hooked to your body, it was standing on the car next to you, all that would not be, as far as I can see, part of the display device ordinance. It's also true that you're allowed to have a display device ordinance and solicit funds any time of the day or night if you are inside those four disc areas, which Mandel and Mark told me you guys were in. And wait a minute, let me finish this. And the only other proviso is the ridiculous one-hour move-along law, which says you have to be gone after an hour if you are there for, 60 minutes. So unless he claimed that you were there for more than an hour...
You didn't know. You had just pulled up.
And then, of course, that they can make any claims they want later. I've got to tell you, these folks are not noted for their accuracy nor their honesty.
Let's manifest the fact that it's ridiculous and hopefully dismissible because it's a trivial waste of time and inaccurate. And I have a question. If somebody places down a blanket on the ground that is a buffer between the case and the blanket has no donations on it, then therefore a solicitation ticket for the case could not be in effect because
if they are inside the four discs, they can be there for an hour. Otherwise, blankets on Pacific Avenue are illegal when placed on the ground outside those areas for even a moment.
That's not whether or not something has been placed upon it.
Doesn't matter. If it's capable of holding tangible things. Now, it has to be said that the police are very selective and arbitrary about enforcing this. It doesn't have anything to do with any kind of a uniform policy.
He was trying to teach her how to give tickets.
And so really it was, they were using you without paying you as some kind of training vehicle. Now, if they're doing that, you must demand an hourly wage. I mean, for heaven's sakes, here you are assisting the poor Parks and Rec in getting their business done. I mean, so there you are. Of course, I don't think the judge would pay much attention to that.
You're a spokesmodel.
We've been talking with
Noel
and with
Ricardo.
Anything you guys want to add?
Thank you for your great sense of humor and for enlightening on the particulars, which I know will help dismiss it.
The only advice I would have is go to the law library or the public library to make sure, or online, look up the municipal code for, it's section 5, it's 5.43, I believe, the municipal code, which has to do with display devices, because that's really what they're probably...
5.43.
I mean, look on your... First of all, look on your ticket and see what the code section is, and then read the code section five times over. Read it once, and then read it again, and then... Because that's what you'll be arguing. If you can win on the code section...
He got there, and like I said, it's how quickly you open or close your case when you take your guitar out, which the officer cannot vouch for at what time he pulled up.
Well, he did say, according to Ricardo here, that he was told to close it, and he declined, I think, quite understandably, not to do that. Therefore,
you're in the middle of conversing with
them. Right.
So plus, and they said, well, if you want, I can give you a ticket. I said, fine, let's get that ticket, and we'll go to court on it. Yeah.
Or, the other option...
Not our best option.
No. Well, the other option is to say, I'd be happy to, you can write up whatever you want. I will not be signing it until I speak to your superior about this because you've got no probable cause to give me a citation. I'm within the four. I've been here for less than an hour, and I'm engaging in busking, not soliciting. So take it down the road, please, and take that woman or whoever the new trainee is with, unless you want to pay me to do it, in which case you have to rip up the ticket immediately afterward.
That would be so fun.
And again, thank you, Ricardo. Thank you, Noel.
Thank you for all you do.
What's your name again? Robert. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for doing what you do.
Yeah.
Thank you. Eating the last pieces of bacon. I'm going to get out of here before I grab it.
And next it's Off to the Red Church from last Monday, and then the show ends. So talk to you again on Sunday. Call me at 423-4833. If you have questions, comments, want to be on the air yourself, or on the stream, I should say, or just want some to be a part of the homeless civil rights movement, that little section of it that I'm a part of.
Talking with an anonymous individual has some suggestions.
Joshua, my name's Joshua.
Joshua, sorry, Joshua. You had some suggestions for free radio.
Yeah, I was thinking, since not everyone has access to the internet, and electronic components are relatively easy to get and cheap, it'd be a good idea to make automated broadcasters that you can position in like random locations throughout Santa Cruz. They're either inaccessible or camouflaged in regards to the acoustics, so they can just broadcast these things that you're going around recording so that they're really, really out there, you know what I mean, and loud and constant, even for those folk who aren't blessed with radio internet.
A novel idea, man. Thank you, Josh. Anything else happening you want to comment on?
I mean, personally, since you're one of the main representatives from this organization, and it may be a little bit of good natured heckling on my part in just saying this, but I think the first step should be selling your vehicle and buying these megaphones immediately.
There you are.
Fuck you, man.
Here, you can have one of my cards again. How's that?
Right.
A sort of a compensation, a booby prize.
Right.
No hassles with police, anything of that sort?
No, I personally haven't.
Any reports of stuff you've seen you want to comment on?
There's been a lot of unexplained UFO activity and strange hybrid creatures that have been plaguing the mountains. So I think we need to form bands of what do they call old school pitchfork mobs and just raid into the hills, and then while we're there and we realize it was all a hoax, we just start picking up the trash and showing Mother Nature a lot of respect.
You trick people into fighting the littering menace.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll stage it all as a hoax, like we're going out there to get rid of these monsters, then we'll just start cleaning up the trash when we get there and we realize it was a joke.
We've been talking to that master jokester.
Joshua.
Thank you. Any reports from the street?
Any reports from the street, no.
Thank you.
Yeah, peace be with you.
And you with you. Anything you want to say for free radio?
For me, it's okay. Estoy bien. Estoy quedando en un lugarcito y un arbolito está bien.
¿Problemas con la policía? No,
no. No.
Bueno.
No, es que estoy escondido un poquito.
Gracias, señor.
Earlier, will we can announce it again or whatever?
Oh, I see Brent is over here in the meeting chatting around with folks. Anything?
I want to do anything if you ask him to, so I'm not going to talk to him.
Well, I see you've got your... Is this keyboard new? We're talking with Musical Mike here, or Merriweather Mike. Are you becoming a maestro on the keyboard here? What's happening?
Just impersonating a keyboard player. We've got a real piano player, Harriet, and our illustrious singer-songwriter, Val Promise, a.k.a. V, covering for Lee, who's still doing research, some say, but he's going to be around. He'll be around.
Doing research. That's a euphemism for
being out there.
Being out there, yes. Dig it. Research in the far reaches. Anything? Are you indoors or outdoors these days, Mike? At night?
You know, we're dodging raindrops. It's not a big deal. Always little nicks and crannies to get in and know it's gonna pass. We've had 8 months of sunshine, so we're due.
any easier this year than last year?
You know, I think socks are getting more available, and putting the liners in your shoes, that's pretty much a given. And you learn little ways to roll.
You've learned the tricks of the trade, have you?
Could be tricks of the trade.
Rules of the road.
That's good.
Shelter from a storm.
Yep.
So you haven't gotten any tickets lately, I assume.
No, actually, the Capitola cops rolled up on me in my spot behind McDonald's on 41st last night, but they were very kind, very polite, almost apologetic. No tickets, not even a warning, just said move along. Here we have everybody's favorite. Ayla.
Favorite security person? Yeah, that would be me.
All right. So thank you. We've been talking with
Bathrobes Pierre, a.k.a. Robert Snorless.
That's one of us, yes. Thank you, Mike. Phil Posner here, who is a hardworking bagel splitter, but he also went to a meeting, what, last night?
No, just now.
Just now. This is the homeless, what's this thing called? It's a heap or the hap,
yeah,
or the hoop?
It's called, right. It's called heap.
Heap homeless... I don't know.
See what it'll stand for.
It's a study and a survey. A bunch of, say, 40 people got together in a room and fought over how many million dollars? 12 million. And what you noticed that...
500 million.
500 million.
Yeah, from the state, et cetera. And Santa Cruz will get...
Well, for the state, but not for Santa Cruz. So this is... Who there did you recognize? Anybody of note?
Well, I recognize the the council people. The city manager was there.
Of course, they're always looking for money. What else?
Some of the other people I didn't talk to. But it was, the reason I think it was important was because it was...
No homeless people, though, huh?
Yeah, there was no homeless people there. And in the terms of the study, the assistant city manager admitted...
Tina Shaw, Tina Bowles, I
think. That they, when they did the survey, they didn't get any input from homeless people, and she said she was puzzled too.
Did she say where they did the survey?
No, I didn't. I should have asked.
A minor detail.
Right. It's right there. Maybe it says.
Let me double check.
Could I get
the state is doing trying to get input.
This one right here.
You got it. The state is trying to get input from various parts of the community, but admitted that they should have had homeless participation.
Yeah, that's nice, but talk is cheap. So, Phil, you're always encouraged by these after-the-fact, last-minute esprit de l'escalier commentaries.
It's my naivete.
Yes, it is. Anyway... You going to the
now
shitty...
How come you weren't there?
I didn't hear about it.
Right, I didn't either, by the way. Micah told me.
They didn't do outreach to us. Obviously, they don't give a shit about what Huff, or Conscience in Action, thinks.
Now, we have to ask Steve if he knew about it.
Oh, I'm sure he did. He didn't tell you about it, though, probably.
No. Let's ask him when he comes back.
He's over there.
He didn't know about it.
Well, he said he didn't know about it? Steve Pleitch did not know about it?
I'm not sure.
I'm not either. We'll find out.
Let's go ask him.
Yeah?
Bring the question?
No, I'm sorry. I don't want to. Anonymous report.
I am. Where is that weirdo?
He's not here at the moment.
I am the weirdo.
Go ahead, sir. Nothing? No?
Egg in the mouth. I mean, I will tell you. I just have to...
yes, can...
Because, but I want to tell you something first interesting.
All right. On or off mic? On mic or off mic?
Wow.
He didn't...
I was diverting somebody that was going to have an interaction, with an official, and they were not going to create a results-oriented thing. It was more for their own giggly fun, and I realized that we're in such a serious situation that we really can't afford to just have a comedy hour with interactions with officials. Mm-hmm. It has to be focused, has to have an end result, and I've been guilty of that too at different times, but this person actually listened to the criticism, but then I looked around and a lot of stuff is not being taken seriously.
To be continued on Sunday. Come on back then. Thanks for listening. See you then, 9:30 Sunday morning.